Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's teleconference. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you'll have an opportunity to ask questions during our Q&A session. At that time, if you wish to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. I'll now turn the call over to Mr. Joe Steenstra. I'm sorry, Eric Steenstra. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi, I'm Eric Steenstra. I'm the president of Vote Hemp. I'd like to thank all of you for joining us today and for reporting on our efforts to regain the right for American farmers to grow industrial hemp. This morning, farmers Dave Monson and Wayne Hauge filed a lawsuit against the DEA in the U.S. District Court in Bismarck, North Dakota, seeking the right to grow industrial hemp without interference from DEA. I'd like to go over the agenda and speakers for today's call. First up, we have North Dakota Agriculture Commissioner Roger Johnson, who will talk about North Dakota's hemp rules and the recent actions he took to license farmers. He'll also discuss his attempts to work with DEA to come up with reasonable regulations to allow North Dakota farmers to grow hemp. Next will be farmer and state representative David Monson, who will speak about his work in the state legislature, his strong support for hemp farming around the state, or strong support for farming around the state and across party lines, his motivations to file the lawsuit, and reasons why he thinks hemp will be a good crop for North Dakota farmers. Then farmer Wayne Hauge will talk about his background, why he wants to grow industrial hemp, and the unique nature of his certified seed growing operation. Then our local counsel, Tim Purden, can speak about what will happen next in the case. And finally, Joe Sandler, the lead counsel, will wrap up the call by speaking about the legal theory of the case and why he believes will prevail. Then we'll take questions from reporters. Before we begin with our speakers, I'd like to mention that Vote Hemp has worked since 2000 to educate the legislators, government officials, and the public at large about the many uses and benefits of industrial hemp. We're a nonprofit 501c4 organization that's become the leading hemp lobbying and education group thanks to many volunteers across the U.S. and a dedicated staff in Washington, D.C., where we're based. For about a year now, we've been raising funds to help farmers in North Dakota grow hemp under state regulations. We're proud that the lawsuit filed today is being funded entirely by VoteHemp supporters. We're also proud that our legal team, some of which are not on this call today, is essentially the same group of individuals who successfully won the Hemp Industries versus DEA case in 2004, which blocked the DEA from banning hemp seeds and oil products. VoteHemp would not have encouraged David Monson and Wayne Hauge to file this lawsuit if we did not think that there was a strong chance of success. Our optimistic approach that hemp's time has come is not wishful thinking, but rather a calculated analysis of the legal situation now before us. Thanks again for being with us today. We'll take questions after all the participants have presented, and we'll be happy to assist any of you after the call's over. Now we'll begin with Roger Johnson.
Well, thank you, Eric. I will be brief. First of all, for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm Roger Johnson, the Commissioner of Agriculture in North Dakota, and I've been the Commissioner for just over 10 years, which is about the amount of time I think Representative Munson's going to talk about some of the legislative history, but it's about the amount of time that the state of North Dakota has in fact passed a number of laws dealing with industrial hemp. My involvement more specifically began in about 2 years ago when we were trying to implement a number of these laws that the state had passed because my agency was the one charged with issuing rules and implementing the legislation. And we had for a long time been stymied from actually issuing rules because one of the tests that is conducted is what's called a legal adequacy test where the Attorney General's office reviews the rule, and the rule must be in compliance both with state and federal laws and rules. So that was for a long time an obstacle to us issuing any rules. Well, a couple of years ago, we began exploring another method for implementing a rule relative to a law that had been passed, which required me to license North Dakota farmers who wished to grow industrial hemp. And so we, in beginning that licensing process, had to issue a rule. About a year and a half ago, in fact, it was in February of 2006, I and several of my colleagues from three other states met with officials from DEA in their Washington or Arlington offices. And at that time, I brought a draft set of proposed rules. We had really two things we wanted to do at that meeting. One was to convince DEA that we were interested only in industrial hemp, not marijuana. And secondly, we wanted to get their input on how we should issue rules on the state level. I think we convinced them, at least I felt after leaving the meeting, and my counterparts felt as well, that we convinced them that we were not interested in marijuana, but rather only in the growing of industrial hemp. The rulemaking process, and they provided some advice to us. We took that advice. Ultimately, about a year ago, we began, we actually put a proposed rule out for public comment. We did two different public comment periods on that rule. We received an incredible number of comments, the vast, vast majority of which were all very positive. And so we ultimately adopted that rule. Let me just tell you a couple of the provisions in the rule. First of all, the rule said that in order for someone to grow industrial hemp, they had to be licensed. And the license involved, first of all, them giving us the geo-positioning locations of the field or fields they planned to plant the industrial hemp on. They also needed to give us 24-hour, 7-day-a-week access to the field. They needed to confirm to us that the seed they were planting was, in fact, industrial hemp seed, that it had less than 0.3% THC content. We had access whenever we chose to be able to go and inspect that field and test, and so it was very very restrictive. We also required the applicants to go through a criminal history check and to be fingerprinted and to be free of anything in their background that might raise flags. So it was very extensive regulations. The final thing, however, in the rule that we put in place said that after all these things were done, we would issue a license, but the license itself would not be effective until DEA also issued permission or approval or approved an application. And so that was the way we got around the legal adequacy test, if you will, or the way that we dealt with the legal adequacy test. Subsequent to that, that rule became effective on the 1st of January this year. We then issued two licenses. Both of the licenses were issued, in this case, to Representative Munson and to Mr. Haughey. We had hundreds of interested farmers who wanted to apply. We strongly discouraged them from going too far down the road because we knew that this subject to DEA approval was a potential hurdle. Last February, then, I met again with DEA. I, in fact, presented those two licenses or copies of the licenses to DEA, as well as I delivered the applications from both Mr. Haughey and Mr. Munson. I presented those applications along with checks for something in excess of a couple thousand dollars, which was the application fee, to DEA, and asked them to please review those applications as soon as they could and to provide a timely decision. That timely decision meant that there needed to be a decision before spring planting window was closed. I explained to them, as they knew, that their application was only for calendar year. And so if they gave us an approval after the time to plant in the spring was gone, it would be of no value. So we did that. They subsequently did not respond. And so the net effect of this is that, in my judgment, it was a de facto denial of the applications, which led us to the point where the lawsuit has been filed today. That's the history. Let me just make one final point. It is my strong opinion that DEA has got to get off this kick of viewing industrial hemp and marijuana as being identical, the same. They need to exercise the discretion they have to regulate them differently, just like every other major industrialized country in the world does. And until they do that, there really is the only option we have really is this lawsuit. The final point I would make is that industrial hemp, in my judgment, is just one other crop that farmers ought to be allowed to plant, and that is really the justification for doing what we are doing in this case. So I just wanted to give you sort of that background on the rules and explain that we have bent over backwards as a state to try to meet their every wish, but they have got to get to the point where they recognize that there's a difference between industrial hemp and marijuana. I'll be happy to take questions at the end when questions are made available.
I'm Dave Munson, state representative from District 10 in northeastern North Dakota. My legislative district runs from Minnesota, roughly 130 miles to the west, and from the Canadian border with Manitoba down roughly 30, 35 miles to the south. Over the years, I became very interested in industrial hemp as a crop. I was reading about industrial hemp being reintroduced in Canada, as well as almost all other industrialized countries around the world. And we at the time were suffering from a crop in our wheat and barley called Fusarium head blight, or scab. And we had a lot of problems with that in our wheat and barley, and in fact burnt almost all of our crops for several years because we couldn't break the cycle of this disease, and we needed a crop that would fit into the rotation and actually keep paying the bills for us. So in 1997, when I found out about other countries doing the reintroduction of industrial hemp, and especially Canada, and that other states were looking at legislation to do this, I went to our leader in the House of Representatives, and I asked him if he thought this was something that we should be doing in North Dakota. And at first he was a little skeptical, and then he said, you know, go for it if you feel that this is something that we need to do. So I did introduce legislation that was quite simple, and it just instructed NDSU, our land-grant university here in North Dakota, to do a white paper and find out if there was potential for industrial hemp in North Dakota. Long story short, the result of that paper was that they felt it was a viable crop in North Dakota, that it might be valuable as far as profit potential as well as in a crop rotation to perhaps break up some of this disease, especially the scab. So when that paper was completed, we, the next session, introduced some more legislation. Such things as taking industrial hemp off of the noxious weeds list, defining industrial hemp as an oil crop, and we set up a licensing procedure very similar to what Canada had, giving Ag Commissioner Johnson the ability or the assignment to develop rules for a licensing procedure. We also, over the years, passed some legislation allowing NDSU to do some research plots, and we had great bipartisan support from the governor, all the legislators, both in the House and Senate, the Ag Commissioner and Attorney General, citizens across the state. Everyone in North Dakota seems to think that this is a viable crop, and there's absolutely no reason, especially based on the fact that we raised it here in North Dakota in the 40s and before that, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to raise industrial hemp. It's just a very practical crop to raise. I have friends across the border in Manitoba, 25 to 35 miles away from where I farm, and they have been raising it now for a number of years. Virtually no problems as far as anybody going out in their fields and raising marijuana in the midst of it, which seems to be the big fear that the Drug Enforcement Administration has. There's huge profit potential. Their profits seem to be in the range of about $250 profit, which is unheard of in most cases in North Dakota, with especially wheat and barley and canola. So besides the profit potential, I see a lot of benefit for small industry to develop, value-added processing plants to develop the crushing of the seeds into oil, and the fiber can be utilized in many ways to make construction materials and so on. So that I guess is what my motivation for this is, to try and break up that scab cycle and disease cycle, which is so prevalent in wet conditions, and also the profit and the value added. And after 10 years of going through all the passing of laws and watching the administrative rules being developed and working with DEA and all the people that have concerns about this, we've finally come to the conclusion that about the only way that this is going to get off the dime is to go ahead with a lawsuit. So that's where we're at today.
Good morning. My name is Wayne Haugie. I'm a farmer from Ray, North Dakota, located in the upper northwest corner of the state. I've had an interest in growing hemp for many years. I actually wrote a letter to the North Dakota Department of Ag back, I believe it was in 1998, asking to be put on a list, an interested growers list. I never received anything back. I called up the office and asked if I was on that list, and I spoke to someone in the Controlled Substances office, and we said, what list? So it was, it's been kind of a long process. When this became viable as an opportunity to grow hemp, I put in my application. I guess I was quite surprised that it went through as easily as it did. It wasn't that difficult. Obviously, if a person doesn't have anything in their criminal nature in their background, it's really not that difficult to be able to grow hemp. My interest in growing hemp is as a certified seed grower. That was one of my initial interests, to provide seed for some of the North Dakota farmers that would be interested in growing hemp. I have had several certified crops that I've grown in the past several years. Also, that's a pretty simple process. You grow a certified seed, you have your fields inspected, you have the seed cleaned by a certified cleaner, and then the cleaned seed is then inspected by the North Dakota State Seed Department. The same process would be true for industrial hemp. So I think it would be a very streamlined, it should be an easy process. The fibers from the crop, the seed would be harvested separately, then the fibers would be separately baled so that the fields would be cleaned so that the crop following industrial hemp should grow quite well, such as durum or barley or some other type of cereal crop. So I think it would, like David Munson said, it would be an excellent rotational crop. It would fit well in most of the cropping practices for the farmers across the entire state. So thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Tim Purdon. That's P-U-R-D-O-N, and I'm with the Vogel Law Firm, V-O-G-E-L Law Firm in Bismarck, North Dakota. I'm one of the attorneys for Representative Munson and Mr. Haugie. And I can report that the complaint was filed this morning here in Federal District Court in Bismarck. The situation with the lawsuit is the next step will be the DEA and the Department of Justice will have 60 days to respond, either by answer or motion to dismiss, and the litigation will go forward from there. The only comment I'd like to make deals a little bit with some of the legal background of the case. As Commissioner Johnson told you, the lay of the land at the beginning of this year was that a North Dakota farmer who was licensed to by the state of North Dakota to grow industrial hemp needed a DEA license in addition in order to plant his crop. But in response to the foot-dragging by DEA and the DEA's insistence on referring to industrial hemp and marijuana as one and the same, the North Dakota legislature took another step just in our past legislative session, 2007, which adjourned 6 weeks, 2 months ago, whatever it was. At the close of the session, the North Dakota legislature repealed that portion of North Dakota law that required a DEA license. It is no longer necessary under North Dakota law for a farmer who wants to grow industrial hemp in North Dakota to obtain a DEA license. Therefore, our lawsuit does not ask DEA to do anything. Instead, we are seeking a declaration from the court, an order from the court, that DEA do nothing. That is, that these farmers be allowed to plant industrial hemp on their farms without fear of being charged criminally by the Drug Enforcement Agency and the Department of Justice. We're not asking the DEA to do anything. We're asking them to do nothing, the same thing they've done for the last 10 years. I will introduce our lead counsel at this point, Joe Sandler.
Thanks very much, Tim. I'll be very brief. The legal basis for this action is pretty straightforward. Although industrial hemp is technically the same species as marijuana, for 70 years, the definition of marijuana in federal law has specifically excluded hemp, stalk, fiber, seed, and oil. And the history and structure of the federal drug law, the Controlled Substances Act, makes clear that Congress understood clearly that hemp is not marijuana, and that it would not have intended the federal drug laws to extend to a state-regulated system like this, in which industrial hemp is cultivated within the state, and only those parts of the plant that Congress specifically chose to exempt, hemp, stalk, fiber, seed, and oil, really enter commerce at all. And the question here is whether it makes sense to believe that Congress, in enacting our federal drug laws, could have intended that someone could grow industrial hemp right over the border in Canada and export the hemp stalk or fiber, seed, and oil into the United States, anywhere, but not grow it, not grow the plant in North Dakota and sell those exact same parts of the plant into South Dakota or anywhere else in the country. And we believe that if you read the statute that way, that illogical way, that it would actually exceed the power of the government under the Commerce Clause, and that there's no impact of this activity on the activity that Congress chose to regulate, which is interstate commerce in drug marijuana and things that go on within the state that could impact that. So that's basically why we believe we have a strong legal case that Representative Monson and Mr. Haughey are entitled to a declaration from the court that the Drug Enforcement Administration cannot proceed against them under the federal drug laws, under the Controlled Substances Act, for cultivating industrial hemp pursuant to their state-issued licenses under this carefully structured and thought-out regulatory scheme that Commissioner Johnson has described. Eric, I think...
At this point, we're going to try to take some questions from reporters. I think Adam's working on getting that set up right now.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. And we'll just pause a moment to allow questions to queue. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and 1 on your touch-tone phone. And again, we'll just pause a moment to allow questions to queue. we'll take our first question from the side of Ann Woolner with Bloomberg News. Go ahead, please.
Yes. Apparently, this is perfectly legal under North Dakota law for the farmers to go ahead and grow the hemp as licensed by the state. But why not just do it? The DEA has no role as far as North Dakota is concerned. Is that correct?
This is Tim Purdon, attorney for the plaintiffs here in Bismarck. The concern, of course, would be that if the farmers planted their industrial hemp crop as allowed by North Dakota law, that they would be charged by DEA criminally under the Controlled Substances Act with the illegal growing of marijuana. Now, we think that the facts and the science are clear that industrial hemp is not marijuana, but DEA has consistently taken the position in correspondence with the commissioner that they are treating industrial hemp and marijuana as the exact same product.
So it's just a precautionary thing. I mean, as far as you're concerned, it's perfectly legal. So it's, but you're just afraid that you'd be sort of, the DEA would move in after the crop is planted, correct?
Oh, so this is Roger Johnson. It's a little more than precautionary. It is. I mean, I don't know that either one of these guys want to be faced with criminal charges from DEA, felony charges, for planting industrial hemp. And if DEA maintains its position that marijuana and industrial hemp are the one and the same thing, then that is potentially what they'd be faced with. So my understanding is this lawsuit just would say from a court, yeah, you're okay. I mean, the arguments that we've been making are it's a legitimate crop. Go ahead and grow it. You don't have to fear prosecution from the federal government if you plant the crop.
And I understand that there have been a lot of discussions with the DEA. Has there been a specific question asked as to whether DEA would prosecute these farmers?
Well, no, we never got to that point. But I can tell you that, as I indicated in my opening comments, I've had two long meetings face-to-face with DEA as we tried to go through this rulemaking process. That was in advance of the recent law change that Mr. Purdon just described. And it's pretty clear, it was crystal clear from the last meeting in particular that DEA intends to treat industrial hemp and marijuana as the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, well, you know that if somebody were out there growing marijuana, they're going to take legal action. So you would anticipate the same thing would be true if you were growing industrial hemp.
Okay. I have one, like, unrelated question, if I can just keep going here. How much profit per acre do you get from barley and canola, if one of the farmers could answer?
This is Dave Munson from up in the northeast corner, and roughly right now the price of wheat and barley and canola is substantially higher than it has been in years. So if I mean, you look at about 70 bushels an acre perhaps on your barley yields and about $3 a bushel, you're looking at, you know, 200 and some dollars. That's gross. I can tell you right now the price of all of our inputs has gone up to the point where I don't know if there is any profit in wheat or barley. My fertilizer for that crop of barley has been running me this year approximately $57 an acre. So you take that right off the top, and then you've got your fuel costs, which of course have gone up, and we're looking at very little profit in wheat or barley, and wheat would be similar, perhaps maybe a little bit higher as far as the profit potential. As my Canadian counterparts across the border are telling me, the net profit is, you know, well over $200 an acre, which is obviously going to be way higher than wheat or barley because the gross production from your wheat or barley is only going to be in that same neighborhood. So profit potential, obviously, for wheat or barley or even canola doesn't begin to compare to where it would be with industrial hemp.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the side of Cheryl Corley with NPR. Go ahead, please. Ms. Corley, your line is open.
Hi,
please check your mute switch.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just wondering what makes you so optimistic that you'll be successful with this approach. I mean, Mr. Purdon already talked about how the DEA has done nothing. Why do you think that, you know, that you'll have support with this effort?
You mean legal, and from the legal standpoint, or?
Yeah, from the legal standpoint. I mean, Congress apparently could be behind you in this, and nobody has stepped forward in that regard.
Well, that's very common. That Congress rarely speaks to statutes once they pass them, except to amend them every once in a while. Our belief is that the original intent of Congress here, the practice under this law, the structure, the very clear fact that Congress meant to exempt hemp stalk, fiber seed, and oil to enable the cultivation of industrial hemp suggests pretty clearly that Congress would not have intended the cultivation of industrial hemp under this state-regulated scheme to be, covered by the federal drug laws.
So you're still asking, however, that the DEA not essentially prosecute these two farmers or anybody that North Dakota grants a license to. Correct?
Exactly. Asking the court to declare that the law doesn't apply so that DEA could not proceed with such a prosecution.
And you're saying you're optimistic because the law is so clear?
No, the law is not optimistic. The law is clear. We think the intent of the law is clear. We think the logic of the law is clear, but the words, you know, obviously aren't other than the fact that hemp, the products of hemp, have been exempt under the law for 70 years. DEA, you know, has taken the position, contrary to logic and common sense and the intent and structure of this law, that hemp is marijuana, and that's what we're up against and what requires a clarification from the court.
Well, Cheryl, this is Tim Purdon in Bismarck, and I would just add that one of the reasons I'm optimistic is because of the hard work that's been done over the last 10 years by Representative Monson, Wayne Haughey, and Commissioner Johnson. We're not just here asking DEA to let two farmers grow hemp. We're asking DEA to allow two farmers to grow hemp under a very restrictive, highly regulated, well thought out and put together state regulatory scheme in which the exact coordinates of the fields are known, the growers have to undergo criminal background checks, and there are a number of safeguards that are in place to prevent any problems in connection with the growing of industrial hemp.
I don't want to belabor the point, but it seems that, I mean, you said that the DEA has 60 days to respond. I would imagine that, you know, they would present the same sort of arguments that they have already, saying that, number one, they think this is a kind of a backdoor way to let people sneak into farmers' fields and grow marijuana, that sort of thing, and would continue their arguments. So do you really think that a court would side against DEA and say, okay, North Dakota, you are taking these steps and we'll side with you?
Cheryl, this is Eric from Vote Hemp, and I'll just say that we definitely do think that. We feel that the argument under the Commerce Clause that DEA really does not have authority here because none of the regulated parts of the plant are ever even going to leave the farmer's farm. So there's no commerce that's ever going to happen in marijuana or even the parts that DEA considers to be marijuana on the industrial hemp plant. All the other parts of the plant that are used in commerce are already excluded clearly under federal law.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the side of Brandon Keim with Wired News. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I was wondering if one of the farmers could talk more about the cycle of disease that you're hoping to break with the hemp.
Well, this is David Munson, and again, we raise mainly wheat and barley and canola, and since 1993, we have been suffering in my corner of the state, and it's actually been expanding and going across the state now to the point where many crops, such as durum, can't even be raised in my corner of the state. Any kind of a grain crop is subject to this Fusarium head blight, and any time you can break up the cycle where you don't plant a grain on grain on grain year after year, you're reducing the possibility that you're going to keep having that scab appear year after year after year. So by putting in more broadleaf types of crops, you can break up that disease cycle in grain, and that is very critical to us, especially when we're looking at a very wet cycle again this year. The whole state is seeming to be having excess moisture, and the potential for scab this year is probably unprecedented in North Dakota. And I'll let Mr. Haugi and Roger Johnson even expand on that. But I know in my corner, we were the first to get hit by this dreaded disease, and it has been devastating pretty much every year since 1993.
Well, this is Roger Johnson. Let me just add some economic numbers to that. There was actually a study that was done by a consortium of universities, and I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but I can get them for you if you want them.
I can tell you
that the direct and indirect cost to North Dakota for a three-year period in the late 90s was in excess of $1 billion as a result of this scab, Fusarium head blight, vomitoxin that is a condition that when it's bad, there's a toxin that is created. I mean, when Representative Munson talked initially, he talked about actually burning fields. Thousands and thousands of acres of wheat were burned prior to harvest because they were of zero value. They were just burned off to try and get rid of the disease. Over $1 billion impact. It's predominantly a problem in the east and the northeast. Wayne Haugi's farmer is kind of in the northwest corner of the state. They may have some scab there, but I'd be surprised if it is. Well, I'm certain it is not as significant as it is in the east.
No, I would agree.
Is it something that's spreading, or?
Yes, it has been spreading. In fact, there were, I think it was 9 or 10 different states that received federal dollars back in the mid to late 90s to try and, there was a national scab, it's almost the Manhattan Project that was undertaken to try and breed resistance into different lines. We've got, I think, 3 varieties of hard red spring wheat right now that have some degree of resistance to this disease. The reason that durum wheat is not grown in the Northeast at all is because so far there are no resistant varieties. And if you have a condition where you've got the spores in the field, you've got moisture at the right time, which is generally right now and as the crop is beginning to head, and you have susceptible varieties, those three conditions are just a recipe for total disaster. And that's what we've got right now this year again.
Thank you. If I might just ask one more question, we've heard the profit per acre figures on hemp plantation. How has anyone sort of tried to predict how large the industry might be in North Dakota, what it might mean in broad terms?
Well, I'll take a first crack at that. It's really too early to say. I mean, nobody's really put that kind of effort into trying to speculate how large it's going to be until you know that it can at least be, can at least exist. And we really need to get, I mean, in my judgment, it could be significant, but it's going to take some time to develop. because there's no infrastructure for it. So you need to have some farmers allowed to plant it. You have to then have an infrastructure to do the processing. That's going to take time to build up. If you're going to use the stock or the fiber, that is something that's going to take, it's going to be a lot of economic activity surrounding it because it's very bulky. You can't transport it long distances. But it also means, because we're not allowed to grow the stuff in this country, all the clothing, all the material that is made from the fiber or the stock has to be processed largely out of country before it's allowed to be imported in, because logistically you just can't import, you can't import that large volume of stuff. So it would take some time to grow.
And just last question, in terms of fertilizer and pesticide inputs, how intensive is hemp farming?
This is Dave Munson. You know, I guess the first thing about it is that it grows so quickly and so fast and grows so tall that it does shade out most weeds. Right now, obviously, there are no chemicals approved for industrial hemp in this country because there's no industrial hemp being grown. In Canada, I don't know that there is anything that is approved as far as an herbicide up there either, but the thing is it really isn't needed, so it's good for the environment in that respect. It takes way less as far as inputs go because you don't have to be spraying a lot of sprays on it like you do with other kinds of crops. As far as the fertilizer requirements, it would be very similar, I understand, to wheat and barley and sunflowers and canola. It's similar in that respect.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the side of Cookson Beecher with Capital Press. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Capital Press is an agricultural newspaper that covers Idaho, Washington, Oregon, and California. So it appears that this is a crop that's good for the northern tier states. And in eastern Washington, for example, we have major wheat growing areas. Could you talk about what areas in the U.S. would be good for this crop and whether this has anything to do, could have anything to do with biofuels? Could this be used for to make a biofuel?
Well, this is Dave Munson, and I do know that many states all across the nation have been looking at passing laws similar to what North Dakota has, and obviously our laws are fashioned after Canada. But I know that from Vermont to California and every place in between, and Kentucky and many other states, not just in the northern plains, have states been looking at passing legislation like this and reintroducing industrial hemp into this country. I know that it grows in North Dakota very well because it does grow wild, left over from the 1940s in what they call ditch weed. And I know that just, 25 or 30 miles north of where I live, they're growing it with pretty good success. It grows very tall and flourishes there. I know that there are other states that probably don't have the rainfall that we have and may have to irrigate and things like that, but there seems to be vast interest all around this whole United States to do what North Dakota has taken the lead on here.
And this is Eric Steenstra for Vote Hemp. I could just add that historically hemp has been grown, as far south as, say, the Imperial Valley in California, and in certainly throughout North Dakota, Minnesota, and a bunch of the northern states. So there's a history of different varieties of hemp being able to be grown pretty much across the entire continental U.S. So I don't think there'd be any area where they wouldn't be able to grow hemp, for example.
Interesting. This is Roger Johnson again. During the war effort, it was actually encouraged for farmers to grow industrial hemp. So it was grown over. That's why, as Representative Munson was talking about ditchweed. That's the leftover from the 40s that he's talking about when farmers were strongly encouraged to grow it because its fiber was important for making ropes and riggings and sails and canvases and all those kinds of things that you would expect a military to use.
And would this crop be a good candidate for no-till farming, since you were talking about environmental effects of growing this crop?
I would think it would be. I would think it'd be a very strong candidate for no-till because it's so aggressive at growing to begin with.
Biofuels
as well. Yes, if you're talking about cellulosic biofuels, hemp would certainly be one that should be considered because there is more biomass produced, more plant material produced from industrial hemp than there is from virtually any other crop that we grow in this state right now. I mean, this stuff grows 10, 12, sometimes 14 feet tall, thick. The potential would certainly be there for that.
And this, in addition to that, this would be it's a byproduct of the seed production. For example, if North Dakota farmers, the profits that Representative Monson was referring to in Canada are coming from farmers who are growing hemp for seed, mostly going to foods and cosmetics. And, as a byproduct of that, the stalk is produced, and that stalk could also be harvested and potentially used to be converted to biofuels.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the side of Richard Keller with AG Professional. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir, the group. I was wondering more about Congress. I would think that you have addressed this through your congressional representation to pass a specific to hemp production. It just doesn't make sense that they wouldn't step forward for you. What's the situation with Congress, and why can't they just do one specific act for this?
Well, this is Eric Steenstra with Vote Hemp. There was actually a bill introduced this year that would have done exactly that, and we are working on efforts in Congress as well. But Congress, there's 535 members up there, and this is a complicated issue, and we just haven't reached critical mass yet to be able to get legislation passed. It's not an easy process to do that at the federal level.
This is Roger Johnson. I'd add one thing to what Eric said, and that is that, besides just getting something on the agenda with Congress, it's difficult to pass something when you've got the administrative agency that's responsible for it aggressively lobbying against it, as I think we would anticipate would be the case with DEA. Secondly, I would point out that Congress, by passing the laws the way they have, has clearly left it up to DEA to exercise their discretion. This lawsuit, in my judgment, and I'm not an attorney, but in my judgment, this lawsuit is about saying to DEA, appropriately exercise the discretion that Congress has already given you. And so, when you go to Congress and say, well, they could do it, but they're just choosing not to, that's not a real strong case to make to change the law. So that's, I think, one of the reasons that Eric is running into difficulty in getting support that he's talking about.
Okay. Another question was that I thought I saw at one point that the NDSU had even established a department that where they were doing research for this for you, other than the white paper, doing some research on production of hemp.
Actually, NDSU was one of the laws that Representative Munson was talking about directed NDSU to do agronomic research on industrial hemp. NDSU applied to DEA to get a license to grow the stuff 8 years ago, something like that, a long time ago. Never heard back from them. The letters that were referred to from the two most recent, the current governor and the previous governor that were sent to DEA, were in support of that application from NDSU. DEA still didn't respond. They still have not responded to that application. And without that application being approved, the only early information NDSU got was, well, if we were going to approve it, you'd have to have a 12-foot-high chain-link fence topped by razor wire and 24-hour security around your plots, which seemed a bit onerous. Even given that, NDSU then subsequently went to another agency in state government and received approval for CoShare to do all of that, but in the meantime, DEA still refused to grant the application.
So, I'd just like to add as well that the DEA actually told the researcher at NDSU that in order to further seek the approval, he'd actually have to build the fence and set everything up and then let them inspect it, and then maybe they would give him a license. There was no guarantee they could spend $50,000 for security measures and still be denied a license.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the side of Valerie Van, a freelance journalist. Go ahead, please.
Hi. My question is for Roger Johnson. When you went to the DEA, you said that the DEA gave you some advice. What advice did the DEA give to you in that meeting?
Yeah, that was the first meeting when I brought sort of an early draft of a proposed rule. I would describe their advice as being mostly technical in nature. They pointed out references to the federal law that we needed to apply. They had some definitional issues that they suggested we deal with, those kinds of things. And we incorporated their, in some cases, we directly adopted what their advice was in the final room. It was sort of a non- I don't remember what it was because it was a non-controversial kind of thing. We did that sort of with the idea that hopefully we would be working with DEA as we went forward with these rules. Somehow or another, I met with the same people a year later after we put the rules in place, and I got the impression that they didn't think we would go through with them because their receptivity was not what I had anticipated based on that first conversation.
Can you also please address the reason why one would or would not want to grow marijuana with hemp?
Well, sure. From a very logical, biological standpoint, you'd be an idiot to try and grow marijuana in the middle of an industrial hemp field because it's an open pollinated plant and you would have cross-contamination such that you would, number one, you would likely increase the THC level in some of the adjacent industrial hemp plants, thereby likely making that ineligible under the industrial hemp rules that we've put in place. Secondly, you would degrade the value of the marijuana that you were growing, so it would be less whatever it is as marijuana, it would be less good as marijuana. So logically, you anybody that's wanting to grow marijuana, that'd be the last place in the world you'd want to have a plant. Secondly, from a legal standpoint or from a practical standpoint, why in the world would someone want to plant in marijuana in a field that has been identified, has been circumscribed, has been geoposition located, is open to 24/7 inspection, has the eyes of the world, the whole regulatory community focused on top of them? Why would you want to try and do that? Thirdly, a marijuana plant, by its very nature, would look different from an industrial hemp plant. I mean, it's the same species, that's true, but one, the marijuana plant's probably going to be shorter and bushier. The industrial hemp is tall. I mean, it would stick out like a sore thumb. You could fly overhead with an airplane and look down, and you could see that there were two vastly different varieties in the same field. It'd be easy to pick out. So I just can't imagine that anyone would ever want to even consider doing that in one of these fields.
Well, as Eric Steenstra with ODEMP, I'd like to add, too, that there's no evidence that that's happened in any of the other countries where industrial hemp's being farmed. There's no reports of that happening in Canada or in Europe or anywhere else.
Probably for the reasons I just mentioned.
Exactly.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from the side of Jordan Smith with Austin Chronicle. Go ahead, please. Jordan Smith, your line is open. Please check your mute switch.
Hello?
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hey, guys. I actually don't need to ask the question, except for I would like to know, Wayne, how do you spell your last name?
I spell it H-A-U-G-E.
Okay, great. But otherwise, I think I'm good for now, so thanks.
Thank you. Easy question. I like those.
Yeah, you got to like that.
Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And we'll take our next question from the side of Cheryl Corley with NPR. Go ahead, please.
Oh, you answered my questions earlier. Thank you, gentlemen.
Once again, that is star and one to ask a question, and we'll just pause a moment to allow further questions to queue.
I think we're done.
Yep. It appears we have no further questions at this time. I'll now turn the call back over to our speakers for any closing remarks.
Eric.
Yeah, all right. Well, I just wanted to thank everyone for being on the call again today. I think we've got pretty much covered everything, but if you have any questions or follow-up, please contact Adam Eidinger at 202-744-2671.
Thank you.
Yeah, and the other thing I would add is at some point I thought somebody said they might be interested in that economic study. If they are, they should. If you just email Adam, he can get in touch with me and I can send him an email link to the study.
Sounds great, Roger.